Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, the Wednesday edition of Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery, Chris Schmidt. Danny, back running the ship. And excited to spend some time with Mike Babcock here in 15 minutes. Historian, author, Hall of Famer with Hail Varsity. 40 years, 4-0 of covering Nebraska football. Babbers has his all-time Iowa team out that ended up rocking and rolling at Nebraska. It is a Wednesday, which means Wilderness Ridge Golf is going to be in full effect. Mike Shewhart, Shuey, will be with us in about 30 minutes. And next hour, fresh off the bus tour. It's the Jerry World Tour. Jerry DiNardo, the coach, Uncle Jerry, going to be with us in 1 hour. And then Ralph Brown, all-century Husker, Husker Hall of Famer, 10-year NFL vet. We will talk to him not only about, you know, who do the young corners look to if things go bad, but also the amount of talent he is going to see and how that Nebraska-Calabraska vibe is going with Southern California quarterbacks for 2019 and beyond. Ralph does Fox Sports out in L.A. and is a primary color analyst for their broadcast. And he's, man, just talking to him off air. He's like, dude, there's some quarterbacks out there. It's like, well, yes. How's Nebraska continue to acquire them? So Ralph Brown will get into Ezekiel Elliott with Ralph as well. Can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, toll free 800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Schilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Let you do that on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio or at Hail Varsity. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. We have Salt Dogs tickets to give away for the 22nd. The day after the eclipse, and you need to be at Haymarket for that. Nick and the gang will be broadcasting there at 11 if you're in Lincoln. If you're coming from outside Lincoln, get to Haymarket anyway and check the Salt Dogs during the afternoon on that eclipse Monday, a little less than a week away. So what we can do for you is give you some Salt Dog tickets here before we say goodbye and Ribfest tickets, two Ribfest tickets. I don't care if you're picky about your brisket or your ribs or your pulled pork. It's all good, and you'll find some tastiness at Ribfest. So we'll give you a pair of tickets for that before we are done. Line up Mike Babcock, Jerry DiNardo, Ralph Brown, and we'll have a jock doc as well with our friends from Lincoln Orthopedic Center before we're out of here. A really good write-up by our dear friend Greg Smith of Hail Varsity. And he had the recruiting angle on this because that's what Greg does. Greg's all over recruiting. But his story today on HailVarsity.com, 10 wins. Let that dance in your mind for a little bit. What 10 wins would mean for Nebraska recruiting? And read the story. It's kind of like the icing, right? If you're sold on coaching, if you're sold on scheme, if you're sold on development, if you're sold on the ability to get better and be in the league, then you're feeling pretty good about what Nebraska's got on staff or where they can maybe send you. But just from a program standpoint, and where are you in the Big Ten pecking order, and where's your street cred at as a program? And right now, nationally, and we'll talk to Brad Edwards of ESPN tomorrow, but 10 wins would kind of move you a bit up in the world rankings, for lack of a better term. It'd make you a little bit more of a, there's Nebraska, they're 10 wins. I mean, then think of some programs that have been at 10 but no more. They've had a 10-win season recently. They tend to get a bit of the benefit of the doubt, either in preseason rankings or maybe you're not so quick to write them off. And maybe you do that too as a college football fan. What'd you think of Ole Miss? Damn their payroll's money. But they've had 10 wins. They've beaten Alabama. What do you think of Wisconsin? You hate them. That's fine. But man, 10 to 11 wins? Look who they've beaten or been in games with. USC, is the sky falling in Trojan land? They're a 10-11 win football team. Same with Oregon. Same with LSU until recently. Texas hasn't sniffed 10 wins. LSU, no longer sniffing 10 wins. It's been three seasons since Notre Dame has been at that 10-win number. But 3 years ago, they were at a 10-win season. Top 10, gold. Clemson climbed the ladder. They were at that 10-11 win number, and then they got over the hump. You're closer to getting better the more wins you accumulate, obviously. You're fine. Miami, they haven't seen a 10-win season forever. Florida State eventually built up from some 7-5, 7-5s. Then they hit the 10-win number. Boom, it's a national title. Don't ask me about Auburn. They're an accordion. South Carolina had a run at 10-win pluses, as did Michigan State. Did they get back to it? So what would 10 wins mean to Nebraska as a program? Not just in the recruiting world, as Greg Smith writes about, and it's a tremendous story. So here's my thing. 10 wins is obviously better than your token 9-4. You can mix in a 10-4 there. But what are the 10 wins looking like? If you get a 10-win season this year in year three, it is not a playoff run or a championship per se. It could be, but it likely isn't. But what it does do is it kind of moves you out of this rut. Not just the 9-4 fringe top 25, but it moves you out of this rut where if you're maxing out even with a bowl win at 9 wins, it means you're not stumbling against this mid-tier level of Big Ten competition. It means that you are now better than on the field Minnesota and Northwestern. And who's the fifth best team in the East? I don't know, Sparty now? Maryland? Don't know. But if you get this 10-win number knocked out, maybe, God forbid, say it's a 10-win season in the regular season, you're 10-3. You're playing in Indy. May not go your way, which I get. But your 10-win season will kind of keep you above the fray of in that class of the coin flips. You're going to beat Minnesota this year or not? You're going to beat Northwestern this year or not? You get a 10-win season under your belt, you're more like Wisconsin, which means you've probably beaten Wisconsin. You've controlled home field. And you can climb the ladder in the West for the opportunity to play for the whole thing. Are you going to get even with the teams in the East? Are you going to get close to Penn State? Are you going to get close to Ohio State? Are you going to get close to Michigan? Not for a year or two, if you ever catch up with them, because guess what? They're still winning the recruiting battles, and they're still out recruiting you. They're still finishing in front of you. Nebraska may have a top 10 class. These guys have top 7 classes. Stacked upon top 7 classes. You got to find a different way to skin the cat, and that's be a quarterback university. Have a better player at the most important spot. Nebraska's working on that. You get a 10-win season, though, it can look different ways. Think back to the last 10-win season. Started out awesome. You go crush Washington on the road. It's your last year in the Big 12. You beat Oklahoma State on the road. Incredible Okie State team. I think they went 11-2. You lost to Texas here. Red out round the world. Take a shot. Then you piss away a lead against Oklahoma. You're up 17. Didn't end like, then you played Washington again. High five. Yay. It's a race that Holiday Bowl DVD. What you were was top 10 good. What happened to you is you lost at home to Northwestern. That was a year later. Forgive me. Getting my years blurred. but your 10-win team can look different. Are you beating Wisconsin on your way to 10 wins? Are you beating Northwestern? Are you beating Minnesota? Are you wrapping up the West? Are you beating Iowa to get to the 10 wins? I think that goes with getting to that 10-win number. And it's been a while. It's assumed you're supposed to, but it hasn't happened. That road you're traveling to get to 10 would go a long way into kind of restoring some pride to Nebraska fans. And I don't think Nebraska fans expect a win against Ohio State or Penn State. I think the hope is that it's competitive. You're realistic. But if you're a 10-win team, and say you go 10-2, pre-bowl, and your two losses to Penn State and Ohio State between 7 to 17 points, maybe it's a two-touchdown ball game, it's a back-and-forth kind of score fest, assuming the weather's not blizzard-esque in Happy Valley in late November. I think you'd be okay with that. Now, you can also go 9-4, 8-5, and have some tough losses. To me, it's not just the number, but how do you get to the number? And I think that's very important to Nebraska fans. Now, outside, as Greg points out, from a recruiting standpoint, you get to 10, it shows a lot of progress. It's not just the jump from 9 to 10, the natural progression of going plus one from one year to another, but it's who you do and who you beating to get there. Presumably, if you get 10 regular season wins, you've probably beat Oregon, you've probably beat Wisconsin, and you've swept the West and avoided the, oh, we should drop football loss to Illinois and Purdue, and you're just short against two teams that are playoff contenders and may get there based on the straw poll you're taking. Who's going to win the Big Ten, Penn State or Ohio State? Who's going to the playoff, Penn State and Ohio State? Michigan may have something to say about that. I mean, you just that number 10 and the association with it shines you in a different light. You got hype with Harbaugh. It's year three, and he's gone 10-3 each year. And Michigan's kind of one of those it programs with the show me what you got, prove it mentality, because he's been at that 10-win number. And while the rankings may shift between 5 and 8 spots at the end of the year, based on 9 wins or 10 wins, Nebraska's got a schedule right now. If they produce 10 wins, it says a lot locally, it says a lot within the state, and it says a ton nationally because of this schedule. A road win at Oregon. You play tough at home against Ohio State. You go hang in there against Penn State on the road. It shows progress, and it shows that you're climbing up the pecking order. So it would do a ton. And let's just be honest, if you're one of the guys out there or your buddy is the, it would calm some waters with not only this guy, either, not if you're a Bo guy or not, I'm just saying just his system and style can work. That would be some proof you got to watch. Not the, you start out 7-0 and you finish 2-4. This would move that and change that conversation if you got to 10 wins. But it would mean a whole heap and lot from a recruiting standpoint because these guys aren't going to go play for, just another 8 or 9 win team trying to move the program forward. Now they're going to a place that, man, they had 10 wins. They're up and coming in the Big Ten. That's the recruiting mindset. But from a college football zip code, where are you? It'd be big. How can it happen? Vegas says no. Several other pundits say no. Maybe this scheme and this talent marriage it's a possibility. Now, is it a reality? Talk to me after Oregon. Is that fair? Can I be that guy? I'm going to straddle a fence. Listen, I think they have the offensive talent to get you 10. Skill guys, quarterback, running backs. I think the O-line's going to be better. Defensively, I think there's going to be a lot of what the hell are we supposed to do going on. And a bunch of guys that are like, this isn't high school anymore. And I know I've been in college 2 to 3 years, but this is the first time I've been playing. What do I do? Who do I look forward to? There's going to be some of that. So the offense better go get half a hundred for about half the year. And then the defense better follow suit and step up. Great to be with you on a Wednesday, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Is Ted an impressive number to you as a Nebraska fan? Or is it talk to me when it's playoff or New Year's Day? I think 10's a good step. A great step when you go find your friend Rick Heyman at Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds that are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. What's that mean? They have characteristics like the earth mined diamonds, but many customers, if you go talk to them, they'll tell you they're as beautiful or much more beautiful. They're eco-friendly, they're sustainable, they are 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mined diamonds. Don't believe me, go see Rick. Maybe it's a birthday, maybe it's anniversary, maybe it's just special time of the year for you. It's football season. How many? This may get you out of Saturday chores. I'm just saying. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln or out west in Grand Island. Go see Rick in Sauter Heyman today, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Mike Babcock next.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We're getting Mike Babcock on the horn shortly. Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, 35 minutes away. Husker Hall of Famer, 10-year NFL vet Ralph Brown. Next hour, we're talking 10 wins. Would that impress you? Would it entertain you for Nebraska in 2017? Great story by Greg Smith on 10 wins and the impact on recruiting. Can log on to HailVarsity.com. Mike Babcock did his All-Iowa team, Nebraska's All-Iowa team, and can find Mike on Twitter at MDBabs on Twitter, and historian, author, Hall of Famer, 40 years covering Nebraska football. Mike, congrats on number 40, my man. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Smitty.
So you got 40 down and 40 more to go. I want to start there with a couple of little memories, of thoughts, of impressions. What stuck with you all these great years of covering, a lot of things in Nebraska, but specifically Nebraska football? What's one thing that you're just like, you just kind of say, man, I'm going to smile about this because it was pretty cool?
Well, I remember my first Nebraska-Oklahoma game in 78 because Nebraska won that game 17-14. It was Osborne's first victory over Barry Switzer in Oklahoma. That's probably the one that sticks in my mind the most. Mostly what I've come to believe, Smitty, is it's more about the people that I've dealt with than it is about the games. So the athletes, the student athletes, the coaches, the other people in the media, the fans, the sports information office, the administrative personnel, just the people that I've dealt with over the years. That's the thing that's been most important to me. And it's a little less personal now. I guess if you're involved in recruiting, maybe you talk to these kids, before they've made the commitment to Nebraska, and you talk to their families, and so you know them maybe a little bit better than I do, because I don't do a lot of stuff with recruiting. Mm-hmm. But back in the day when I started, and certainly a good deal of the time that I was doing it, we didn't have social media, and the access was a little different than it is now. It's changed of necessity because of the numbers of people that are involved, and because of social media and all the things that go into that. And the program was pretty open, I felt, when Tom Osborne was the coach. I consider that, a blessing to have been involved with that stretch of the program, to get to know Bob Devaney as athletic director and be involved in some things like that. But You know, people, I guess, is the thing that's been the most most important to me and why I've kept doing it. And you know, I'll always remember the Oklahoma game. I grew up with Nebraska-Oklahoma, that rivalry, and you know, I hated to see those teams separate in conferences. And I still probably, for a regular season road trip, going to Oklahoma was probably the one thing that I enjoyed more than any other. And you know, Nebraska consistently went to the Orange Bowl under Osborne, and I went to a lot of Orange Bowls. So I actually there were a couple of shops there that I always went into to bring home souvenirs that Nebraska was there often enough that they didn't necessarily remember my name, but they'd say, "Ah, oh, Nebraska," you know, and
that's your name. It's, hey, it's Nebraska. Yeah. He's here.
That's how often, you know, I think Osborne had, what, 8 Orange Bowls, something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so those are the things. It's the people more so than the games, and obviously the national championships. That was exciting particularly for the fans.
Mike Babcock's with us, entering year 40, covering Nebraska football at MD Babs on Twitter. Mike, that's a great recollection of your time, and we love your work and what you do and how you story tell, my friend. It's wonderful. And Mike's column in the latest Hail Varsity is something you need to read. It's very on point and heartfelt. It's really cool. Mike, you just did a story, the All-Iowa team, and you've done a ton of these over the summer and into the season when you pick a state, or kind of the Dakotas as an example, or the All-Texas team, or the All-California team. Now we're into Iowa, and Nebraska didn't cross the old Council Bluffs barrier often to head east, but when they did, they hauled in some talent, didn't they? Iowa's a really good state to look at and see some of the gems Nebraska got. And tell us a little bit about your list.
Well, you know, one of the things that sort of prompted it was the offer that Nebraska made to Wagner, the defensive tackle,
sure,
from West Des Moines. West Des Moines and Nebraska hasn't really recruited a lot of scholarship guys really since Osborne's final season in 97. I think I counted 4 scholarship guys that actually came here during that time. And so it's a lot of the guys on that top 10 list are you know, Osborne era guys or in a couple of instances there, you know, Laverne Allers played for Devaney, but you know, I thought it was a no brainer kind of at the top of the list there with Trev Albertson. And for me, Roger Craig was one of the,
yeah,
you know, Roger Craig was one of the great, not only was an outstanding player, and he was bothered by injuries as a senior, and they had experimented with putting him at fullback so they would have him and Mike Rozier in the same backfield, but injuries kind of precluded that from him really doing that. And he didn't catch a lot of passes at Nebraska. I want to say he had probably fewer than 30 pass receptions. Which didn't reflect what happened when he got to the NFL.
No.
how he balanced off running.
He had 30 in a game, it seemed like.
Yeah, yeah. But he was a remarkable team guy, as that willingness to move to fullback after he had, you know, he finished with 2,400 yards rushing, and you know, I just he was a very accessible guy. And he just had the right attitude. And I, sort of the interesting footnote with Roger, and, you know, I could go on about Trev Alberts. I could go on to a lesser degree because I didn't cover him, but Laverne Allers, you know, I saw Todd Milliken play. I saw Jamie Williams play, Bill Lewis. Dan Haydenfeld I had on the list. He was a walk-on player. He is number one on Nebraska's all-time career punting list. He averaged almost 44 and a half yards during his career, and in his, I want to say his senior year, he averaged almost 45. Average, you know, we're talking about average. So, it, you know, that was a pretty nice walk-on to get there from Des Moines. And then finished it out with Scott Reardon and Kyle VandenBosch and Van Brownson, who I kind of compared to, you know, he was sort of the Brooke Behringer to Jerry Tagge, if, you know, if Tagge had been Fraser kind of guy, because they alternated as sophomore and junior. Freshman couldn't play with the varsity at that time. And then Tagge kind of stepped up as the starter and when they were seniors. But I thought it was a pretty good list. As with anything like that, you know, that some people would dispute maybe some of those rankings, but felt pretty good about Albert's number one. And from my experience in dealing with Roger Craig and watching what he did with Craig, number two. And Allers was a two-year starter for Devaney, and he was an All-American, consensus All-American. I remember watching him play when I was in high school. So I felt pretty good about those guys. And, you know, Todd Milliken and Jamie Williams were both tight ends. So you could probably toss a coin there. But Todd Milliken caught 40 passes during his career, and 14 of them went for touchdowns. That's a pretty good percentage,
I'd say,
for a guy who was recruited as a linebacker. So, you know, it's fun doing those things. And as I said, because Nebraska hasn't recruited a lot in Iowa here lately, I thought it was worth taking a look back. And also, you know, I'd mentioned he wasn't in the top 10, but Mike Stuntz will always remember that that pass, touchdown pass to Eric Crouch after a pitch out from Thunder Collins in 2001, which I always kind of considered, you know, that's kind of the watershed. That was kind of the last hurrah for the kind of excitement that Husker fans had with that run of national championships. And then, you know, in 99, when Frank made the run there, you know, that 2001, I think Nebraska, when they played Oklahoma that day, it was Nebraska was ranked third, Oklahoma was one. And then we know how that fell apart at Colorado.
Yeah, so it was the last hurrah for one versus two or two versus three. Mike Babcock's with us here on Hail Varsity. Read his latest story, All Iowa Team, on HailVarsity.com. Mike celebrating 40 years and counting of Nebraska coverage at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, about 15 seconds. What else is coming up from you?
Well, I'm working on a weekly web feature on Tom Osborne. First one I did, I kind of went through his high school and college career. They're fairly short, succinct things, but I, you know, I find it interesting that he had opportunities. Nebraska even looked at him a little bit, but he ended up going to Hastings College. So, yeah, each week we plan to have one kind of taken up through his how I got to Nebraska and so forth.
Can't wait. That'll be outstanding. Mike, congrats again on year number 40, and thanks for everything, and thanks for your time today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Smitty. Good talking to you.
There he is, Mike Babcock, historian, author, Hall of Famer. And you can read him exclusively with HailVarsity.com and magazine. Got to get that new issue. It's the volleyball preview, and got to read Mike's column for sure. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment coming up. Mike Shewhart on deck. Jerry DiNardo, 25 minutes away at Hail Varsity Radio.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Mike Babcock, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. In 30 minutes, we welcome him in. It is that time. It is the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart. Shuey is in studio. Plenty of membership benefits and pricing. You want your kid to grow up and be an awesome golfer, like a youth champion, like the Divot Dogs?
Oh, yeah.
I think you go to Wilderness Ridge, wildernessridgegolf.com. Get a tee time Sunday and think of fall golf, 402-434-5106. Of course, Shuey, Director of Instruction, also Husker Golf, and just awesome Chris Thompson, PGA Director of Golf and PGA Professional. Shuey, congrats. I saw the smiling faces of your Divot Dogs, your youth champions, the young dudes that have been groomed and tutored and taught, and they made Papa Bear proud with the championship. Tell me about your guys' win and in league. What a job. Congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, that was 4 years in the making, man, trying to get that belt.
It's your first it's another recruiting class that went up, right?
So almost wore the belt today, but
you should have, man. Where's it at? Just in your office, or do you like do Stanley Cup it? Do you pass it around to each kid?
We got it displayed out.
The ones that eat Cheetos don't get it, but
actually the belt's big enough to fit
all of them in.
In two of them. Two little kids could actually wear their belt. It was pretty cool. They were wearing around like they just.
That's so good. Okay.
It was fun. We had a great time. You know, we'd worked really hard and. Like I said, man, been 4 years we've been trying to win that thing. We came close every year, but we never could get it done, and this year they got it done. I mean, they had to work pretty hard to get it done, though, but it was exciting.
What was the difference? What do you think?
They just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it, and just like we talked a lot about, it's like, you know, it's just play each shot at a time. And
stick-to-itiveness.
Stick to it and see if you can just see how many points you can get, and... One little match that I was with, I mean, they played a young man that played awesome. I mean, he hit some incredible shots. And we got down early, but they kept hanging in there. And one of them made a nice little putt for eagle. And by the time the match was done, they ended up coming back and winning that match by a point. And it was pretty much the difference.
Tell me about your, and you've told me, but if someone's just checking out the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment for the first time, and we talked Divot Dogs, reintroduce that.
So it's a team format, so it's called Team Golf, and that's our team name. We call them the Divot Dogs, and it's teams that consist of there's six players. You can actually have more than that, but you have two kids play in a scramble format, and they play against other teams that are around the state, and you play all year in this format, and you earn points. And as you earn points, you qualify for the playoffs. If you get through the playoffs, you make it to the championship. If you get to the championship and you win the whole thing, you win the coveted team golf belt.
That is nice.
And it is nice.
Good for you. That is, I mean, I can, now when you get back to Wilderness, do me a favor. Need a picture.
All right.
We want to retweet that thing.
Got it.
And I know you're smiling.
Yeah. It's fun. I mean, it's just fun watching the kids, you know, and they really get into it because of the team aspect of it. That's really the cool part because they got a partner, you know, and they start to form a bond, you know, and they high-five one another. They pick one another up. And it's like, and they get in
some
each other's face.
Important life lessons, don't you think?
Very much so. All kinds of different ways. It's pretty cool. Like my one little guy, he got into the other guy, and he says, come on now, I need you to hit a really good tee shot right here. So it's like, ooh, putting a little pressure on him right there. But they don't know pressure.
Talking your buddy up.
That's right. They just stand up there and rip it right down the middle. So it's really fun to watch them play and watch them have, you know, the amount of fun that they have. And then obviously to win is even... that much more
cherry on top.
When they found out that they won, man, it was crazy, man. They went nuts.
So. Mike Shuhart's with us. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment here on Hail Varsity Radio. It is Divot Dogs, his young pups, able to win the championship and working hard as a group 4 years. And if you're thinking about youth golf and you have a son or daughter that can learn, can enjoy it, can do it as a family, and then also, hey, can be competitive with it, maybe you think. Shuey and the gang at Wilderness Ridge, the place to go, wildernessridgegolf.com. PGA Championship.
How about that finish?
Yeah. How about the poise of one Justin Thomas? And I don't know a ton about Thomas, other than now he has a major. What's kind of your read on him and your reaction to his win?
It was pretty impressive to watch. Obviously, he's had a great year leading up to that point, so it's like he's been in position to be able to do that. But, you know, I'll brag a little bit. That morning, I said Justin Thomas is going to win the tournament.
Good.
You know, it just because one of the things to me that's really cool about not just him, but that group of guys that are coming up, he's really good friends with Jordan Spieth. He's really good friends with Ricky Fowler. The next generation of golfers that are going to carry the torch of the tour and golf in general. And it's really cool to watch those guys because at the end, after Justin had won, who was there? Ricky Fowler was there. Jordan was there congratulating him. You know, it's like it shows what golf is should be and what golf is all about. I mean, these guys are super good friends. They're super competitive when they're out on the course and each one's trying to beat each other's brains out. But at the same time, they're very supportive when one of them steps up and plays really well, you know, and they've grown up playing golf together. So it's pretty cool to watch, and it's pretty exciting because golf is in pretty good hands with that group of guys. There's a whole bunch of them in there that are young, middle 20 guys that are going to be around for a long time and are incredibly talented that are winning majors left and right. So it's
they're competitive, but yet they're civil.
Yeah.
And you tell me, Shuey, when you were playing the PGA, when you were playing other majors, and when you were, you know, on the tour, was there a level of, I mean, yes, there was respect, but was there the same kind of feeling where, okay, if I can't get it done, I want one of my guys to get it done? Was there this closeness back?
No, not even close.
20, 25 years ago?
No, not even close.
Why do you think that is?
I think it was just the nature of the beast in that it was the tour is evolving into what it is now. I mean, there's a lot of money out there, a lot of prestige. So it was just kind of getting into that kind of arena, and guys were more independent, so to speak. So they were kind of like,
it wasn't me versus the golf course and me kicking your butt.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's not just the golf course. It was endorsement deals. It was all of the fame that goes along with it. You know, now it's kind of changing a little bit in that you got, like these guys. I mean, they grew up playing golf together because they played on AJGA, which is a junior developmental tour.
Okay.
So they've known each other for a long time. They played golf against each other. They traveled together. You know, golf has evolved, too, in that aspect of it. Before, you just played kind of in your areas. Now, these young kids are going all over and playing, so they're getting exposed to different guys from different areas, and they're becoming friends, and they stay lifelong friends together, and they move themselves up to the tour. Now they're friends on the tour, so the camaraderie is more that, you know. When I played, it was more like you did your thing, and he did his thing, and I'm trying to win the tournament, and I don't really care much about what you're doing, or if we walk off the golf course, it's like, you go do your thing and I'll do my thing. And there wasn't as much. There was groups of that, but not as much.
You had maybe a group you ran around with, but maybe just because you weren't introduced to each other at an earlier age,
exactly,
there wasn't a budding friendship.
Yeah.
Or
it's pretty cool. I mean, it's,
game would respect game, but that's
about it.
That's what had to take it to the next level to want to go have a beer with a guy.
It's fun watching these guys now.
Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues on. We'll talk Tiger shortly. Hail Varsity continues.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. 10 minutes, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. Uncle Jerry's off the bus. He is happy. Mike Shuhart's in studio. WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 434-5106. Membership benefits and pricing. Please examine that for this fall and your next major decision when it comes to what club you want to be a part of. In Wilderness Ridge, amazing course, 27 holes, the 18-hole championship course. I love taking Junior to the Talon course. It's the 9-hole course. They do have some par 4s and a par 5, but a lot of par 3 work. My putting is disastrous, so I need to get Junior introduced to Shuey. And Mike Shuhart with us. Husker Golf, Shuey, is around the corner. We'll get into that here. But we were just talking during the break here about today's PGA, not only major winners, but just the group of guys like Spieth and Rory and Justin Thomas, guys that root for one another and win. And a thought on just today's PGA Pro, just how well-rounded they are, not only from a media standpoint, but just an accessibility standpoint, and kind of a pay-it-forward mindset.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, again, is exciting to me about this young generation of golfers that are coming out there, you know, Jordan and Justin and those guys. You just watch their interaction with fans, with the media, with the kids. I mean, they take the time to talk to them, you know, and does it look like they have to do that? Yeah, they need to.
They don't look forced, though.
No. I mean, they understand that they like to do
it. It's part of the gig.
And it's kind of the gig. But they like to do that. And they understand the importance of that. You know, they understand the importance of the fan. They understand the importance of the youth, because that's the future. And they were youth at one time playing golf. So it's like, you know, it's – and they respect the game and what it's all about. And having the opportunity to do what they're doing, they wouldn't be able to do that without these people. Mm-hmm. You know, so they get it and they understand it. You know, they're really good with the media. They talk to the media. They take tough questions. You know, they don't shy away from them. So it's really refreshing to me to watch these guys. You know, it makes me excited about the future of the game.
And just the dynamic, Jack and Arnie. I mean, was that that relationship? I mean, it eventually became okay, but at the time it probably wasn't.
No,
I mean, copacetic.
No, I mean those are guys. You know, Arnie's and Arnie's fans were, they didn't like Jack because Jack was dethroning Arnie. You mm-hmm. know, and Jack wanted what Arnie had and wanted to be what Arnie was. So it's like, were they really happy for one another when the other guy won? Not quite like these guys are, because you know he wanted to win the tournament as bad as the other guy did. You know, so it was a totally different dynamic, you know. That's what's refreshing about it. You know, if you watch the PGA after Justin was done and he was leaving, man, who was there? Jordan Spieth was high-fiving him. Ricky Fowler was there high-fiving him.
It was genuine.
And it was. They were really excited. But they're good friends, you know. And they were really excited for him. Did they want to win the tournament just as bad as he did? Sure. But they were super excited that he had won the tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really refreshing to see. And to see those guys take the time to stay there and celebrate with him when he's done, you know. So it's really cool. I mean, that to me is what golf is all about.
That's awesome. Pro Mike Shewhart, WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 434-5106. Spend your time on the green out at Wilderness Ridge with those membership benefits and pricing, and go see Shuey for instruction. Shuey, hang out. Uncle Jerry's coming up.
All right. Love to
All right.
To him.
Jerry DiNardo, next on Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour two, it is Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, producing and engineering, Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge, Mike Shewhart. Shuey's hanging out in studio. Did the golf segment last hour. Ralph Brown, 10-year NFL vet and Hall of Fame Husker. Next segment, we welcome in with the Big Ten Network, the coach, Jerry DiNardo, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. The BTN World Tour taking a bit of a break and back in Minnesota tomorrow, leaving Nebraska on Tuesday. Coach, thanks for squeezing in a few minutes with us. I know it's been a hectic travel schedule. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks.
Well, let's start off with your trip to Lincoln. And, Coach, what were some things that you were interested in observing? I mean, obviously you get a day with all of the teams in the Big Ten, but what are some thoughts you had? What are some things you were looking for before you got to Lincoln?
You know, a lot of positive changes, Chris, at practice. I think the energy's higher than I remember it. I think part of it is, obviously, the players now know Coach Riley and his system. I think you have both staffs coaching what they really want to coach. You know, the transition offensively, although necessary, you know, I think was difficult. And now they're in the offense, I think, that they want to play with as they go forward. And I think that energizes a staff, which in turn energizes a team. I think it's been well documented that Bob Diaco's a high energy guy. So I was just really impressed with both sides of the ball and the energy of the team. And I think it starts with the fact that both offense and defensive coaches are doing what they really want to do.
Jerry DiNardo is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You mentioned that energy coach, and you've coached a long time. And was that something that, just being a former coach, you kind of knew where maybe Mike was coming from or even Coach Diaco was coming from, just that belief in what they're doing and how it could affect the room? Is that something that you could relate to?
Yeah, I always think it takes a little bit of time to get your program installed, and I don't know that it was an easy transition for Mike. I just think Nebraska's a big time program, and everyone's expecting so much. And you get there, Brady Hoke went through the same thing with Denard Robinson at quarterback, and so it just, to me, it just seemed just so more natural, mm-hmm. comfortable. Yesterday than I remember it. And so, and again, it's one practice. So, maybe I got him on a good day. Maybe other days I've got him on a bad day. But I do think that, especially for the offensive coaches, this is what they've wanted to do offensively since they've been there and really haven't had a chance to do it.
Coach DiNardo's with us. When, looking at your Twitter account and you and Howard and Revson did a great job along with Dean Hart, just kind of updating Nebraska fans, updating the Big Ten on social media. And you mentioned the reboot being an understatement, but the scheme moving the program forward, this style of offense, when it's operating at its best, how game-changing do you think it can be in the league?
Well, I think it starts in the West, Chris.
Sure.
One of the great things about divisional play, I was in the SEC when it first went to two divisions, is if you win your division, even if the other division maybe is deeper or has more talent, and you get to the championship game, you just have to be better than that team that you're playing on the night of the championship game. You don't have to be a better team. You have to be a better team that night. Iowa almost won the Big Ten championship a couple years ago when Michigan State went to the playoffs. If they could have stopped Michigan State on a 22-play drive, Michigan State was certainly more talented than Iowa that year. But that night, it was down to the last play of the game, or almost the last play of the game. So my point is this. If you look at the Western Division, Wisconsin has won it. Iowa has won it. Now, Nebraska was there a couple years back with Bo. It didn't turn out real good that night, but I think to win the West, the way Nebraska is built, much like Wisconsin and Iowa, is the best way to win the West. Then when you get to the championship game, you might be out-talented now, but as recruiting improves, especially with the new rules specific to Nebraska, mm-hmm. then I think that even helps them. So I think this is the scheme for Nebraska to continue to build the program to a championship level, which is obviously what everybody wants.
Identify how you can take down your own division and then let the cards fall in the Big Ten championship game against a team maybe you're rematching. It's a sound plan. Coach Jerry DiNardo with his Big Ten Network, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, the lines of scrimmage, what and who impressed you in your snapshot when you were here on Tuesday? Does the line look better, at least in this short glimpse you have?
I think it does. I do, and I think I've said this on Twitter. Maybe I didn't say it on Twitter. Maybe it was on the radio. But, there was no inside drill, no 9-on-7 drill. Mm-hmm. And so, that's usually where you watch the lines on both sides of the ball and the linebackers. You watch them during individual. And then when you do an inside drill, which is a drill for your listeners that may not recognize it. There's no wide receivers, there's no passes, it's just the line against the line with the running backs and linebackers. And that drill wasn't in the practice. I'm sure it was in the day before, and it probably was in today. We just caught a day when it wasn't in. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel good about exactly coming away with a great feel about the line of scrimmage. Other than, it looks like they're fine. Gates looks over the top good. He jumps out at you no matter what drill you're doing. But I think they're solid there, Chris. I wish I could tell you more. But if they weren't solid, I think that would have come out. I just wish I had a better feel for them.
No, that's completely fair. You want to see how they square off against the defense. And do you think the buzzword's been energy by Diaco and the standard he holds his defense to. Do you think maybe that has helped push the O-line to be better?
Well, I just think energy, as I go around and watch teams, I can tell you there's teams that coach with no energy, and I don't think they get a lot done. And then there's teams mm-hmm. that coach with a lot of energy. Now, whether the energy started with Bob or whether the energy started because the offensive coaches are comfortable, I mean, I don't know. Sure. I think it's a combination of all these things. And you just get a lot more done. It's more fun for the players. The other thing, Chris, is the new rules. No more double sessions. So now the players are probably a little bit more rested. So, for me, I think it was a perfect storm this year for how good they looked. I think a year ago it was just the opposite for me, if you recall, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you do.
Yes, I do.
I wasn't impressed a year ago with the practice and the practice structure. But, again, it's one day. But I'm going to go based on, what I see, not necessarily what someone else reads. And I was very impressed.
Jerry DiNardo, a couple more minutes with us here on Hail Varsity Radio at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Big Ten Network in Lincoln on Tuesday. They saw Nebraska. They are off to Minnesota tomorrow. Coach, I want to spend a second on Tanner Lee. And is he a guy you think, again, to preface it, one day, but is he a guy that could be, in your opinion, one of the top quarterbacks in the league, based on this quick look? Is he a guy that can keep Nebraska in games with his talent level?
Sure. I mean, first of all, there's not many guys in his system, right? It's basically Iowa, it's Michigan, it's Wisconsin. There's not many teams built around a quarterback like Tanner.
Gotcha.
He certainly can throw it. He's as advertised. Specifically, what I thought he did really well is ball placement. If there was a tight end or receiver dragging across the middle, he put it in front where the receiver could catch it without breaking stride. If it was a long pass, the receiver could catch it in a spot where the defender couldn't defend it, and he kept stride. And so he definitely can spin it. I mean, anybody can watch that he can spin it. But watching him during the team drills especially, his ball placement, I thought, was really excellent. He's the right guy. I'll tell you what, though, Chris, the other two quarterbacks are good. I mean, this is a deep quarterback roster right now. And Mike Riley says it. Mike Riley's so fired up about this team because he loves the chemistry. And he keeps saying, and my quarterback's never taken a snap. But you do get the feel that Tanner's a little unusual, that he's played in games at Tulane. He was here last year. They brought him to media days. I would say he's an unusual first-time starter. So I think we're all encouraged by those things, and now we just have to wait until Arkansas State.
Coach, have you been to Wisconsin and Iowa? You've been to Iowa, but have you been to Wisconsin yet?
We've been to Iowa. I'm in Minneapolis as we speak, and we go to Wisconsin, and they practice Friday night.
Okay.
So that tomorrow afternoon, Minnesota, Friday night, Wisconsin.
Who else that you've seen to this point, what other program has wowed you?
I think I would say to you, Michigan State, I think they're much like Nebraska, and I know they play each other. Michigan State, to me, looks like the teams that Mark D'Antonio was building in year like 6, 7, and 8.
Okay.
Not like the Final Four team or the semi playoffs when they got blown out by Alabama. That was a really talented team. This isn't that talented of a Michigan State team. This is Mark D'Antonio's kind of team. I think Michigan State's going to bounce back in a big way. I don't think they'll win the East, but they'll have something to say about who wins the East. And I'd put Iowa there. If Iowa can throw and catch the ball, which I don't know that they can, especially based on one practice, they're going to be a really, really solid team. They're very good in the offensive line. They're talented in the running back, but new quarterback. They haven't really showed that they can throw it and get off coverage and all that. So I'd say those teams, of all the teams we've seen, I put Michigan State, Iowa, and Nebraska kind of in the same spot where, man, they look good at practice. can't wait to see him play.
Can I dare you to give me a win total? I know you gave one last year.
Well, you know, I don't have the schedule in front of me. I know they play Michigan State in the crossovers. I know to go to Oregon. Probably not. I'm going to do that probably when we do that East-West show next week.
Okay.
I'll probably do it then. I mean, I would just be taking a shot in the dark. But let me say this, though, because, you know, I get a lot of feedback on Twitter, you know, some of it positive. But, you know, because I said I think this is Mike Riley's best team, it's his best staff, it's the best scheme. That's kind of how I termed it on Twitter. That doesn't mean I think they're going to have their best season.
Sure.
And I'll stand by that right now. I think this is the best coaches, the best scheme, and the best team. Now, whether they win more games than they won last year, I don't know. It's because you only control half the equation. I'm just telling you, when I watched them yesterday, I said, Mike has got this thing going. If they take advantage of the new recruiting rules and they keep going in the way they're going right now, it's hard to reach the Nebraska fans' expectations because that has championship written all over it. And I think he's on the right track based on yesterday.
You know, their crossover is Penn State and Ohio State. You get Ohio State in Lincoln. Your other crossover is Rutgers. So, I mean, it's...
So you don't get Michigan State. I was wrong.
No, you're fine. I'm not trying to correct you on the air. I'm just saying the crossovers are still not easy, two of the three.
Two of the best teams we've seen.
Right, I mean two playoff teams, absolutely.
Michigan, Chris, Ohio State and Penn State have separated themselves from everybody else to this point. So we've seen nine teams. So I would put those three. Then kind of on the bottom is Rutgers and Indiana, and then you've got these teams in Maryland, and then you've got these teams in the middle that we've seen, Iowa, Michigan State, and Nebraska. So you're right. The two of those crossovers are two of the most talented teams for sure, and probably two of the best teams we've seen.
I think the O-line, if they stay healthy, can be all right. I think Lee's a difference maker at quarterback. The depth at receiver is a question, but it's not that there's not talent there. They got some young kids that can really be good at the skill spots. Defensively, though, it's that transition that is the other buzzword of the fall camp, is how do they switch over to the 3-4, and do they find a guy at kind of that outside linebacker spot that can be a monster pass rusher but still be good in coverage, and of course you don't have Chris Jones at corners, so I think it's a big ask to be great defensively year one in a transition, especially from a 4-3 to a 3-4. It could happen. I think Diaco, you know, his mindset is it's going to happen, but there's a reality to it, and I think the offense could help the defense out early in the year until they kind of get their sea legs. I think they could, though, be a really good team, but I think a year from now, when everyone's a senior, it could be really dynamite, especially if you get Lee back.
Yeah, I is encouraged and optimistic as I am. I would say cautions a little bit. You know, there is going to be a transition, and there's going to be some things that we don't expect right now in the transition. Probably the bigger transition, obviously, is the defense. And then we don't know about injuries. The good thing about changing on offense is the relationships are already there. Sure. You know, it's not like you're taking over a new program the first year when Mike Riley had to put tape on helmets to know everybody's name.
Right.
So when you take over a program, you're not only installing a new offense and defense, but you're trying to build relationships. So the fact that relationships are already built, and I can tell you Bob Diaco is an easy guy to get to know and get to like. So the transition there is pretty easy, and they've got two of their defensive coaches, I think, back, or more than two, back from last year's staff. So there's familiarity already there with relationships. That helps a lot. But there'll be some bumps in the road. I mean, this isn't going to be easy. It's never easy.
Jerry DiNardo, making it easy for us here on Hail Varsity. Big Ten Network giving us time after he got out of Lincoln. Coach, we'll catch up soon. Enjoy Minneapolis, and thanks for your time today, sir.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Take care. There he is, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. He is in Minneapolis. I don't know if he's going to go get a Juicy Lucy, his cheese-stuffed burgers, but he'll find a good eating spot. We will catch up with a Hall of Famer, 10-year NFL vet. It is Ralph Brown next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk with a Hall of Famer with Nebraska football, a 10-year NFL vet. You'll watch him if you're getting some sun out west. Fox Sports West, color commentator. And he's part of that anniversary celebration coming up against Wisconsin. The 97 championship team, Ralph Brown, back with us at Ralph D. Brown on Twitter. Ralph, how are you, sir?
I'm great. It's always good to be back on your show.
Man, you're awesome. Thank you for taking the phone call and being on the show. We appreciate your time as always. And how you feeling, man? Kickoff is nearing for Nebraska. I know we talked to you week to 10 days ago, as it was week one or two. I forget. It's blurry to me. But now it's into week three. And, you know, Nebraska has some things moving the right way. They'll get into Arkansas State prep next week, but it's still a chance to kind of close things out and secure some spots. What's been your reaction from afar with some things you're hearing and seeing? How you feeling about this defense moving forward?
Well, I really like what the Diaco's doing, what I'm hearing about how he's coaching the guys with a lot of energy and how he's a great teacher. I did research on him and followed him from the past, North Carolina at Notre Dame, and he gets the best out of all his players. And it seems like that's the sentiments of what's going on right now with the defense. Everyone has high energy. Everyone's accountable. They're giving 110% on every play, and that's something you're excited for, because now you know there won't be guys probably taking plays off, and people are going to flow to the ball, do their job, and they should have a good time.
Ralph Brown's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You have Eric Lee, a high-profile prospect that is seeing time and likely going to start opposite Lamar Jackson, and we've spent a lot of time talking Lamar. DiCaprio Boodle is a guy that, at least in some of their Skelly drills, we've seen also work on the outside as Lee could move into the inside from a nickel standpoint. And as Coach Dante Williams said Tuesday, you know, right now there's three starting quarterbacks when you go with that extra defensive back. And what are your thoughts from what you remember and have seen about Lee and Boodle? Lee's been in the program. Boodle's a redshirt freshman, but they're both young dudes. And I highlight your experience on this. You're a guy who started your entire career freshman to senior year. When you got in, did you have an older guy to lean on, or was it a young secondary? Do you remember?
Well, when I came into Nebraska, I had that old secondary with Michael Booker. Stokes was on the back end, and you have Mike Minner. So I had all these veterans, and the whole defense was just stacked with veterans. So when I struggled, I just leaned on the veterans and just basically drafted off of their confidence. But when you look at this group with these young guys, they got a lot to prove. Eric Lee's very scrappy. I really like how he plays the game. He's confident. He'll tackle and stick his nose in there. Lamar Jackson had a tough year last year with his confidence, but I think this year he's looking to try to, you know, rebound off of that and make sure he makes plays and doesn't let the game become too big for him. You have Boodle too. He's young. So all these guys, situationally, week to week, it's basically going to be a fluid situation, and they're going to have to keep proving themselves, because you know what the talent is in the Big Ten. They're going to be some top flight wide receivers, and these offensive coordinators right now are going to be licking their chops because this group is so young and they're going to try to attack these guys. But with the defensive coordinator that Diaco is, he'll do his best with putting these guys in the best position to succeed, but they're still going to have to do a lot on their own to prove that they can play on the outside.
Ralph, what can a 3-4 do from a pass rush standpoint? And, you know, it's year one of this, so not all the pieces are ideal. They'll work. There's some good talent, but it's not specifically who or what you've recruited to. And from a pass rush standpoint, that was an issue last year. Can it get better with this scheme change to help that secondary?
Well, I think so. I think Freedom's coming off a great year from last year. You got the Davis brothers. You have Neil also on that defensive line. These guys can cause a lot of disruption on the inside. Your linebackers with Young and Newby, with the blitzes and the schemes and the disguising that Diaco does, I think they can make it a little bit easier for the guys on the back end. If they can get after the quarterback, be disruptive, make sure the pocket is cramped and ruffled for a lot of these quarterbacks, and then that takes a lot of the load off of the young secondary with Lee Boodle and Jackson. So if Diaco and these guys up front can basically get after the quarterback, control the line of scrimmage, they won't have to worry about protecting Eric Lee and Jackson too much throughout the course of the game or the season, because these guys are going to be basically covering and looking back and seeing the quarterback on the deck.
Ralph Brown's with us, Hall of Fame Husker, 10-year NFL vet, and Fox Sports color commentator out on the West Coast and part of the 97 National Championship team. You've played in both defenses, a 4-3 and a 3-4, and the experience was different for you based on the team. What did you enjoy? What style did you enjoy most, or did it matter?
I really had my funnest experiences with the 3-4 just because you have one extra athlete on the football field. A lot of the defensive coordinators that I played for were creative with their blitzes. They would come in with a lot of new blitzes that would basically mess with the quarterback and his head and the offensive lineman's number count. And it's fun with all that movement when you can get off to the quarterback. It's a blitzing defense, and there's a lot of guys that can run on the field. You take one less athlete off the field and put one athlete on the field, and it makes everyone just faster and fly to the football. But it's all predicated on how much talent do you have on a defensive side of the ball, and I was fortunate to have talent in the 4-3 and a 3-4.
Ralph, I want to talk 1997 for a minute, and you guys will be honored Wisconsin week. They've got the Ralph Brown throwback jerseys. I don't know if they are the crop cut kind to show off the abs. That might be scary, but maybe that's in the works with Adidas. I don't know. But did you know that 97 team was special, and what fueled you guys? What made you become the last team to win it all and stay undefeated?
Well, I think 96, when we lost to Texas in a Big 12 championship game, we feel like we should have won the national championship in 96. And everyone went into the offseason with a chip on their shoulder, and we made it a point that we weren't going to lose a game that next year, but we were going to take it a game at a time and make sure everyone did their job. And when you can play with anger and feel like you should have beaten a team the season before, or you feel like you should have won the national championship the season before, there's a lot of weight that you can carry throughout the season that can get you excited for each week to dominate your opponent and try to win a championship.
So you kind of had that mission, like something went wrong the year before. 96 was still a really good year. That said, it was kind of different from what the team had been used to, correct?
Yeah, you know, we get shut out. We get blanked up in Arizona State. Then we lose in the Big 12 championship to Texas. That was a dogfight going back and forth. And both of those games, we feel like we should have won. We were just flat, and we don't know why we couldn't get our bearings right and get things in order at ASU. We got blanked. So there was a lot of things from 96 that we carried over to 97 that gave us a lot of fuel throughout the offseason and each week that we played to try to get back to the national championship game and win the national title.
Ralph Brown's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Ralph D. Brown. Follow him on Twitter. Ralph, want to get you your thoughts NFL-wise here for a second. What's your reaction to the Zeke Elliott situation, the suspension, the appeal that's going on, and, you know, guys can get caught up in the NFL, and guys got to be careful in the NFL. How do you look at this?
Well, for one, I think it's just a wake-up call, and I think Roger Goodell needed to come down with a heavy hand on him just to wake him up. But at the same time, there's things that the NFL knows behind the scenes sometimes that the public doesn't know. It's the same thing what happened with Ben Roethlisberger and his situation. Sometimes the authorities don't come down with a punishment, but still the player gets 3 to 4, 5, 6-game suspension. And I think in this case, Roger Goodell and his staff and the guys that do their due diligence and their research know something that a lot of the public doesn't. I think that's why they handed down a 6-game suspension. It may get reduced. I don't know if it came out yet or not, but it may get reduced. A lot of times they do reduce guys' suspensions when they go in and try to challenge the number. But in this case, Ezekiel Elliott just needs to grow up from college. A lot of things that guys do when they're in college, they think that they can be the same person when they get to the NFL, and you can't. You're in a bigger spotlight, and actually playing for the Dallas Cowboys, it's more magnified because of how many people are Dallas Cowboys fans, the city of Dallas, and you being the running back you are, having the season that you had last year. So hopefully this is a wake-up call. He gets in line, and he becomes a professional player like everyone wants him to be.
Ralph, what are you hearing about your Arizona Cardinals? The window's not shut. They've got some amazing talent. And a couple of years removed from a serious contender for the Super Bowl, how do you think Bruce and company will do in the desert this year?
I think they have a good chance to win the NFC West. You know, it seems like everyone's primed and ready for this season. They're mad about what happened last year. There was a lot of injuries. The Honey Badger was injured. You know, Carson Palmer didn't have a great year, and you know that offense and defense, they basically was decimated. So this year, watching them when they're off season, watching them in the preseason game that I saw right now, they look like they're excited. Everyone doing their job and playing and trying to get back to that top flight defense that they were, and the offense moving the ball like they do with Bruce Arians, stretching, pushing the ball down the field, and putting a lot of points on the board. So I'm excited to watch them. I think they can be a surprise this year in the NFL and make some hay if they get into the playoffs and actually challenge to possibly represent the NFC.
Ralph, what I'll leave you with this. You get a chance each week on Fox Sports Los Angeles to call high school action. What is that talent pool like that you've been watching and you expect to see this year, specifically at quarterback, because Nebraska's been mining the old West Coast for quarterbacks. You know this.
Yeah, so in California, especially in Southern California, the hotbed that it is down here, when I get to broadcast a lot of these games, you look at the quarterbacks. I haven't seen so many great quarterbacks in such a concentrated area, I think anywhere in the country. And it's almost like each week you're going to see one to two quarterbacks that are rated high in the state or high in the country that are good pocket passers, 6'1", to basically 6'4", 6'3", guys with powerful arms, great going through their progressions really well. And it's just a hotbed down here, and it's fun to be able to broadcast games with such great talent at the quarterback position in high school.
Ralph Brown's with us at Ralph D. Brown on Twitter. Last thought, Ralph, has Nebraska's name continued to kind of grow out where you're at when it comes to the quarterback? Are kids and quarterbacks associating Nebraska with a place to think about going?
Definitely. And of course, you look at what Tanner Lee's getting, and all the hype and all the support that the media and pundits are saying about him right now, with how he throws the ball, how he spins it, how accurate he's been. That only adds to what's going on out here in Southern California. The buzz is out here. The Calabrasca is going on, and people are jumping on the Nebraska train down in Southern California. So I should see this continue with the talent, the quarterbacks down here as well. And you know Coach Riley, he loves Southern California. So we're going to still continue to see, after Tanner Lee, moving forward, probably some quarterbacks from Southern Cal going to Nebraska.
Ralph, we'll catch up soon, my man. Thanks for a few minutes, bud.
Always fun. Thanks, buddy.
There he is, Hall of Famer Ralph Brown. 6-month online subscription is yours right now if you're caller 4 and caller 5. The ultimate online experience, HaleVarsity.com. Recruiting insight, breaking news. Caller 4, caller 5 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HaleVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how are you?
Doing pretty good, Chris. How are you?
Doing all right. Getting ready for football around the corner, and still plenty of baseball to talk about. And very scary to watch Bryce Harper. What an incredible season he's had. And, man, that was touch and go, it looked like, and it sounds like things will be okay. Dr. Doug, let's spend a few minutes on Bryce Harper today and kind of explain what you saw and then what injury he suffered from. And we'll go through his injury. How's that sound?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously it's scary when your MVP goes, you know, and goes down going around first base, but you know, so it's a wet situation. The bag is wet, and he steps on the bag, and boom, down he goes. Looks like he has kind of a hyperextension injury when he does it. And that's a pretty common place for knee injuries in baseball, actually, is individuals awkwardly making contact with first base, whether that's because of a slick bag or whether it's because of striding out to try and beat a throw or trying to dodge the, you know, first baseman's leg or whatever. It's just a pretty common place for people to get injured, actually, in baseball.
He got hyperextended, carried off, out for quite a while. And Dr. Doug, you've been around baseball and pro sports and college sports and high school sports. And, man, first base, that bag, it can be treacherous, can it?
Yeah, there's no question. You can, you know, you get you'll get more injuries around first base probably than any of the other base positions in baseball. Because you've got people sliding back head first. You've got people going absolutely as hard as they can go trying to round that bag. You don't usually have the collisions necessarily that you have at home plate. But I remember a college baseball player that I took care of that it was the first baseman getting injured where he ends up having his arm taken out by the player who was running down the first baseline and ends up tearing his collateral ligament and getting a radial head fracture in his elbow. So it's a pretty injury-laden area of the baseball field for sure.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Bryce Harper. So the MRI says a very significant bone bruise, but no ligament damage, and the Nationals are optimistic he can be back. They are playing great baseball. The Dodgers are playing better baseball than everybody. So that is a lot. That's on many people's minds. What's the team that can maybe challenge LA? And it could be Washington. And you may not have Bryce Harper forever if you're a Nationals fan. With the injury here, Dr. Doug, tell us about the bone bruise. And yay, no ligament damage, but the bone bruise sounds pretty brutal.
Yeah, so when you see the injury and hear somebody say, as a physician, when somebody says to me, hey, I hyperextended my knee when I planted it, very first thing that comes to your mind is an ACL tear. Mm-hmm. That's such a common way for people to tear the ACL. And so I'm sure that that's what was going through everybody's mind, on the training staff there for the Nationals. But there are times, of course, where the ACL holds up, and with the hyperextension, the thigh bone just kind of bangs against the leg bone in the front part of the knee. Hard enough to where there's actually what we call microtrabecular fracturing. Mm. And what that means is that the soft part of the bone inside of the bone experienced enough impact from that hyperextension that it bled and it bleeds inside of the bone. And it feels like a broken bone. And that's why they're, you see a picture of Harper laying there on the ground just really struggling, and it is understandable because it feels like fracture.
What is the treatment for that bone bruise and the pain, and how does he move forward back to health?
And so when it's really painful like this, I'll usually put people onto crutches for a while. Basically what you're trying to do is just offload that bone so it has the chance to heal up as quickly as possible. A pretty typical scenario with this would be somewhere in the 2 to 4 week time frame before he gets to a point where he's going to be able to go hard on this again. The only issue that comes up is that if he has just the right kind of hyperextension maneuver again, he could go back to square one almost instantly. So he's going to end up having to be careful, but I think there's pretty high likelihood of him getting back and contributing well. I really think that as far as his bat is concerned, I think he's going to be able to turn on his knee pretty well, and so that's obviously a big issue for him. He may get back to batting faster than he will get back into the field.
And there's no DH in the National League, so that could be tough. You mentioned when you hyperextend, ACL's the worry. To your knowledge, was there some stress on that ACL, or did it stay out of harm's way because of the bruise?
Yeah, actually, when this happens, and you get the bruise in this position in the front part of the tibial bone, it's usually something that really doesn't involve the ACL at all. So the ACL should be okay. I don't anticipate any problems from that perspective for him.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. We're talking Bryce Harper. You mentioned just comfort. Is he going to be pain-free in the batter's box and in the outfield when he fully recovers, or is there a likelihood of this still lingering just a bit because of how I mean, how awful it looked and how painful it is.
Yeah, there's certainly a possibility of some persistent problems, and the reason for that is because the cartilage that overlies the area of the bone that's impacted here, that cartilage gets impacted just as much as the bone does. Mm. And so at times we will see, after a bone bruise is completely healed up, that we have persistent swelling in the knee, we have persistent pain in the knee, and sometimes we have to go in and scope the knee and do a cleanup of the cartilage surfaces there. So in the longer term picture, that's kind of that concern thing that would be out there. Majority of the time, no, but it certainly can happen. We've seen that happen before.
I look at Harper's age and just what he's accomplished so far. Do you think his physical conditioning helped him avoid injury?
Absolutely. You know, the reality is that the better trained our muscles are around a joint, the better likelihood we have of being able to avoid injury. Kind of have to think about the muscles as being like the spring around the piston on a shock absorber. Mm. That spring picks up the majority of the stress, and if those aren't functioning really well, then there's a lot of stress on that shock absorber, and in this case, the knee. His athletic conditioning, no question that allows him to avoid a bigger injury than what he had, and probably significantly improves his likelihood of getting back.
Dr. Doug Tavis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Bryce Harper, our topic. Dr. Doug, we'll catch up again. Thanks for a few minutes.
You bet, Chris. Have a great week.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. Winding down a Wednesday. Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. He's in Minneapolis. He was in Lincoln a couple of days ago. His thoughts on Nebraska. Husker Hall of Famer, 10-year NFL vet Ralph Brown also joined us. Mike Babcock in hour one. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment and PGA Pro Shuey, was awesome. Tomorrow on the program, ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards, all-time talent. When you think about offensive line, the pipeline of Nebraska, Rob Zadiska, part of the pipeline, get his thoughts on offensive line for Nebraska 2017 tomorrow. And then we'll have Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson, a Hail Varsity. It's an open practice tomorrow, so excited to be down there for that and get caught up. For over 80 years, we've been doing things the AgriGold way. Over the decades together, we've built a brand that's truly different. Different because of our knowledge. Different because of our passion. Different because we represent the voice of our customer. Our true partners, providing customers the very best seed, always backed by a handshake and a promise of more diversity, less risk, and a greater yield. For more information, please visit agrigold.com. Can dial up 800-262-7333. A message from your friends at AgriGold. All right. We have some goodies to give away. Tuesday, VIP seats, salt dogs. Is that it? Is it Tuesday?
Yep, it's Tuesday the 22nd.
So the day after the eclipse.
Yep, the day after. They'll be playing the Gary South Shore Railcats.
There we have it. So caller four gets the VIP seats to Haymarket on Tuesday. Caller four, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. And we still have the...
We still got the Rib Fest tickets, which is from August 17th through the 19th, and we got two of those bad boys.
All right, caller five gets the Rib Fest to get you in there. Caller four, Salt Dog tickets to Tuesday, VIP seats. Caller five, Salt Dog tickets. It is pretty sweet. And keep this on your calendar. Many of you are heading out to Haymarket for the eclipse. Nick Gregeth will be there from 9 to 11. Husker Legends Night coming up Saturday, August 26th at Haymarket for the Salt Dogs. Sioux City's in town. Get to meet and see Mike Rozier, Johnny Rogers, Eric Crouch, and Dr. Tom Osborne, all at Haymarket, Husker Legends Night, Saturday, August 26th. Get your tickets now, saltdogs.com, but find a way there. That'll be outstanding on that Saturday night with Rozier, Michael Heisman, Johnny the Jet, Eric Crouch, and T.O. That is phenomenal. That is the 26th of August. Be at Haymarket for that amazing night with the Salt Dogs. But Salt Dog tickets now for you for Tuesday, caller 4. And you have Ribfest tickets, caller 5. 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. Big thanks to Danny for rocking today. If you're in Lincoln, stay tuned. The beer show coming up. That is on the way. If you're outside of Lincoln, the ESPN Lincoln app can hook you up there. Talk to you tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity.